The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On The Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We talked a couple of minutes ago about the impact of Jon Stewart's Daily Show on American satire and society. But Stewart also inspired entertainers around the world to go hard on politics, sometimes in countries a lot less tolerant than ours. Bassem Youssef actually wasn't even an entertainer at all. He was a heart surgeon in Cairo. But he was a fan of Stewart's, and he studied what made The Daily Show work. And after the Mubarak regime fell in the Arab Spring, Youssef started his own satirical show called Al-Bernameg, which translates simply as The Show. And it was a huge success around the Middle East. Viewers loved it, but the ruling classes not so much. In its third season, Al-Bernameg was canceled under heavy pressure from the government. Bassem Youssef was forced to flee the country, and he's been living in the United States ever since. I spoke with him in April just after his book, Revolution for Dummies, had come out. Bassem, I must tell you, I told my mother that I would be interviewing you, and I explained to her that for your early adult life and until very recently, you were a heart surgeon, you were a doctor, and you dreamed of becoming a comedian. And she looked at me and she said, "So he's an even bigger fool than you are, David."
Well, yeah, this is quite a disappointment for any mother, especially in the Middle East. Is your mom Jewish?
She is.
Exactly. That's exactly my point. We share the same exact views about everything.
If I had been a heart surgeon and then went off to make my living picking talking dog cartoons, I couldn't imagine the heartbreak. But talk about that first decision of yours to leave a thriving practice and a hospital practice as a surgeon, as a thoracic surgeon, and become a comedian.
I was a doctor waiting for my papers to come from Cleveland because I was accepted to work there as a pediatric heart surgery fellow. And I was waiting for my H-1B visa. A revolution happened.
So this is at Tahrir Square.
Yeah, this is Tahrir Square. The revolution started and finished. And then afterwards, me and a couple of friends started to pitch the idea of maybe we need original Arabic content for YouTube. And they said it was their idea, but like I came up with the concept is that we should do political satire. And we did the videos. I posted there online. I didn't expect that more than 10,000 people would watch it. Suddenly we had 5 million in less than 2 months. And I have every single TV station wanting to hire me.
But how did you have this talent? Were you just the kind of funny doctor who made occasional jokes about the patients?
I was a regular guy who would just say jokes like the other guy. I was not particularly a clown of the hospital or the class clown. I was just like a regular guy with like the good old regular Egyptian humor. That's it.
What was the first episode about?
The first episode about is like how the media was trying to get people out of Tahrir Square, trying to spread whatever rumors there is, that to tell them there are people having sex in the streets, there are different kind of nationalities conspiring against the country, that how this is all an external plot orchestrated by Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, CIA, and the Mossad all together.
There's one amazing moment in one of your shows where you ask a woman who's brought a kind of shopping bag full of stuff to Tahrir Square, and you say, who's helping you buy these groceries? Or somebody asks her, how do you afford these groceries? She said, well, I get help from the Americans. And then with perfect comic timing, she said, and Iran, Hezbollah, etc.
Yeah. And that was so natural because this is what we have been hearing in the media. It drove us furious and mad to see how the media were belittling the people. And unfortunately, many people believed them. There are people from outside, so they must be enemies, so this revolution must be bad.
Now, you saw Jon Stewart as your main influence right away. I mean, the resemblance and the things that you were getting from him were not hard to see. So what was the power that you saw on The Daily Show? What was the attraction that you had to it?
He was making fun of authority, and I liked that.
And no one was doing this in Egypt?
Never even in the Middle East. There's nothing. The satire that was allowed to exist was social satire. It was good if you want to make fun of the people.
But never Mubarak, never Sadat, never Nasser.
Oh, it's fine with the prime minister, but the presidents, no. I had 30 or 40 million people watching me, 50%.
30 or 40 million people were watching you?
Yeah. Towards the end, I was 40 million.
I repeat that only because there is not a show in the United States that I can think of that comes anywhere remotely near that. I think a couple of million people watch Jon Stewart on a nightly basis.
Yeah, we were the only show in the Arab world that was making fun of authority.
Bassem, at one point in your new book, Revolution for Dummies, you write, "I was a satirist, not a freedom fighter." Don't you think you were a little of both and are a little of both?
No. I think this is part of...
I mean, Jon Stewart would make the same protests all the time. He would say, you know, I'm just a satirist. I'm just making dumb jokes about Sarah Palin or Donald Trump. That's always struck me, with all due respect and admiration to Jon, as a little disingenuous.
I don't think it's disingenuous, because when everybody has got a job, a satirist has got one job.
What's your job?
The satirist is not just to make fun or dumb jokes. The satirist his job is to bring more people to the table to discuss issues that might otherwise be difficult or dumb or dull to discuss. I talked about like how they wanted to bring coal back into, and they call it clean coal, right?
Oh, you have clean coal too?
Of course. And
is it any cleaner there?
Oh, yeah, sure. I tried to speak about coal. I tried to speak about sexual harassment. But I was not, we didn't have the luxury of changing things, because authority is just too powerful there.
Tell me what the pressure was like. You were getting pressure all the time from the government to ratchet it back, to shut up, to calm down, to not make jokes about this or that or the other thing. And you felt that pressure from one avenue or another. What was the effect on you at home, with your wife, with your small daughter? And the pressure took what form?
The pressure was kind of, I was taken for interrogation. There was a warrant for my arrest. I went to be interrogated and persecuted for like 6 hours, basically.
What was the interrogation like?
They were basically asking about my jokes. Did you mean to insult the president? Do you mean to insult Islam? And it was like the most ridiculous interrogation ever.
And how did you answer questions like that?
I tried to be a smartass, and then my lawyer was just advising me to not say, this is not your audience, this is not your theater.
You didn't get a lot of laughs in the interrogation room?
Oh my God, the prosecutor didn't laugh, but the people in his office were sitting there, and they were laughing because he was reciting jokes from the show, and they couldn't help it. So that was it, but like under the military, the pressure was ugly. There were people at my theater. Threatening to kill me.
In the audience?
No, outside my theater. They're threatening to kill me, threatening to burn the theater. Shows being stopped. There was like...
Signal. You had a show stopped, how?
They were jamming my satellite signal. You know, it was crazy. And so this is where members of my family and members of my friends started to hate me, because I was speaking against the military. Because the military in Egypt is sacred much more than religion. And and till now, there are uncles and aunts in my family who think that I am a traitor, and I am a traitor to our military.
That must have been painful.
Very painful. People from my own flesh and blood that would actually share from on their Facebook pages the hideous stuff that been said about me on the military.
Uncles and aunts were sharing things that were attacks on you.
Yeah, and friends from school that knew me for 20 years. But when I was critical against the military, they just like flipped out. They were like, they turned overnight to be fascists. And that was hard.
Tell me about leaving the country. When and why did this happen?
It's November 2014. There was a big arbitration case that was going on forever between me and my ex-network, who canceled me. And then I received a call And my friends told me, we lost the arbitration. You owe them $15 million or $13 million.
Which was not exactly in your checking account, $13 million.
Not even a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of that. They told me, the lawyer told me, listen, this is a political verdict. The next step, they would either confiscate your belongings or they would put you on a no-fly list and they will prevent you from going outside the country. I received this call at 2 p.m. 5 p.m., I was on a flight outside of Egypt. And this is when I escaped and I never went back.
This was just an instant, you knew right away you had to get on an airplane.
Yeah, yeah.
Your family?
No, they followed later. I always had the hope that they will not go after my wife, which thank God they didn't.
When you pick up the paper, as I'm sure you do, like the rest of us, do you see similarities between Donald Trump and Sisi?
Other than both are being played by Putin? Yeah. it's the same thing. It's the same empty rhetoric. The non-facts, the alternative facts, the blatant lies, the victimhood that, like, we have been wronged by everybody, and the demagoguery that, like, we are going to prevail and make Egypt and make America great again. It's the same thing.
What does it tell you about the direction that this country is going in now that you live here?
Well, I wouldn't go that far and be dramatic and say direction, because at the end of the day, you guys lost an election, just one election. And hopefully you still have institutions. People have to have faith at the 400 years of democracy, because if Trump single-handedly brings down democracy in this country, then your democracy was very fragile. And I hate to think that. So I was on Colbert, and he asked me to give him a diagnosis, and that was during the primaries. And I told him, well, America's body of democracy is still very healthy, but it just have a big orange mole on its ass. So after Trump being president for 2 months, he asked me, so doctor, what's your diagnosis now? And I said, I think people should stop trying to diagnose the mole. Mm-hmm. Nobody understands the mole. The mole could be a benign mole, a malignant mole, a Russian mole. Stop trying to understand the mole and focus on getting rid of the mole. So that was my diagnosis.
Bassem, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for all you've done and will do.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bassem Youssef's book is called Revolution for Dummies.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.